Man, there's times when I go out there and I cast one time and I'm already got a fish hooked onto my line, that excitement that I get from it. There's other days where I'm out there and it's the 100th cast. And it's like, man, am I ever gonna catch a fish today? Am I ever gonna catch anything? It might be that next cast that I get a fish on. There's a lot of days too where I don't catch fish. And it's just as much as enjoying it, the process of the fishing, of the preparation, of the casting of my line, of finding a spot, of looking at the weather, determining where I'm going, do I have all the right gear? Like, all of that stuff is still just as exciting for me, even if I don't catch any fish. Just even being able to do it and having the opportunity to be able to fish. And I'm always learning something every single year too, which is always exciting for me during the walleye run. Because I'm fishing next to people maybe who've been doing it longer than I have, some younger guys, some older guys. I'm learning new techniques. I'm learning things from the people around me. But it's not all necessarily just about the catch for me. It's being able, the willingness to be able to do it, the opportunity that I get to do it. And I just love being out there and being prepared for that catch. But once I get that fish on a line and I know that it's a fish, man, I am pumped. My adrenaline's flowing. My hook is set. I'm reeling it in, trying to feel the fish as it's coming in so I don't lose it. That anticipation of what kind of fish is it? What species of fish is it? Is it a walleye? Is it a carp? How big is it? All of that excitement, which brings me back to all the prep, the spot, the cast, just that preparation prepared me for this moment to be able to be prepared for the catch that's coming in. And as that line gets closer and closer, that anticipation, that adrenaline continues to build and build and build. So I get my net to scoop that fish as I pull my pole up and get that line, and I scoop the fish to see what type of fish it is. Man, the excitement and the adrenaline that I just get to experience of bringing in a fish, there's just nothing quite like it. And just like that 11-year-old boy when my dad taught me how to fish, that got me hooked when I was 11 years old, got me all excited, bringing in that first fish is literally the same exact thing that I still feel today fishing after all these years once I have a catch.
I think that catch deserves a clap. Come on, Seth, way to go. Thanks for sharing. How many of you like to fish? I'm just curious. Oh, a lot of you. How many of you like to eat fish? Oh, good. I figured you're probably in one of three camps when it comes to eating fish. You either love it depends, or you're a hard no. How many of you love it? Blackened, grilled, fried. If it smells like the ocean, you're in. Me too, okay, I love fish. But where's the depends friends at? Yeah, let's be honest. If you say to yourself, does it taste like fish? You don't really like fish, okay? You like what you can put on fish. It's the tartar sauce that's doing the heavy lifting here, okay? We're just gonna even it out. How many of you are a hard no? You're like my wife. She is mentally allergic. Like, I don't think she's ever had fish. She's just decided she doesn't like it in advance. Yeah, which, if you've ever been served a fish whole, I think you can understand how people go that way. When we traveled to Israel, we would visit the Sea of Galilee, that lake, and they would serve us what they called St. Peter fish. Right there, which is an experience, okay? I mean, I'll be honest, when your food is making eye contact with you, feels a little less like dinner and more like date night, okay? But I ate every bit. It was delicious. I do have my limits, though. If the fish is coming from the Maumee River and we're going to eat it, I think you should pray over it twice, okay? Bless this food, God, please. Please, yes, bless this food. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about the catch. And we all have our preferences. And it's not just with fish. It's with people, too. You have people that you naturally move towards. And then you have people you quietly move away from. And what we've been looking at is how Jesus invites us to fish for all people. And what you may not realize is that fishing isn't just for them, it's also for us. Because as much as some people need to be caught, we as Jesus followers actually need to fish. And so today we're going to look at the Gospel of John. For those of you that are new to the Bible, John is one of Jesus' disciples. And at the end, not the end of his life, but after Jesus left, he sat down and wrote out some of the things that he witnessed and some of the things that he heard. And it was so valuable to the first century Christians that they meticulously copied his writing and distributed it to churches all around the Judeo, Israel, Rome region so that other people could read about Jesus' life. And then later, it was decided to be included in what we now call the New Testament or the Bible today. And here's what's fascinating to me. One of the things that John does early on as he's recounting Jesus' ministry is he puts two conversations back to back intentionally to help us get a vision, a picture of what Jesus was really like. In John chapter 3, John records that he, Jesus, meets with Nicodemus. And I'm assuming some of the disciples were a part of this meeting. And when they showed up and saw Nicodemus, they were like, this is the kind of guy we need on our team. He was educated, he was influential, he was a respected religious leader in the community, and he was excited, he was earnestly trying to understand who Jesus was and had some questions for him, but Jesus was a bit of a controversial figure for him. And so Nicodemus decided to meet him at night, which is where we got Nick at night from. Just kidding. Dad jokes for days. And some of the 20-year-olds in the room is like, Nick, it what? It's an old TV show, right? So Nicodemus is asking Jesus questions about God, and Jesus is answering him, giving him a picture of what God's heart and God's mission is. If you've ever seen the reference to John 3:16, it comes from this conversation where Jesus tells Nicodemus, God so loves the world that he sent his one and only son so that whoever believes in him, receives him, will not perish but have eternal life. Essentially, Jesus invites Nicodemus to believe, to receive, to follow him. And what was the result of the conversation? We're actually not sure. Nothing is recorded. No mention of Nicodemus, no impact. There is a little footnote at the end of Jesus' life when Nicodemus was one of the names of individuals looking for a burial place. But aside from that, this conversation went nowhere, even though it was with a respected religious leader. And then in John chapter 4, Jesus meets with a Samaritan woman. And as you will see, she's the opposite of Nicodemus. Her life is a bit of a mess. Like, she's easily overlooked and often misunderstood, the kind of woman that people move away from. And John puts these two stories together so that you and I can see there is no type of person Jesus prefers or seeks over another. He's fishing for everyone. But if you came in today and you feel like your life is a little bit of a mess, I think Jesus has something for you. In fact, if you came in today and you're like, I've been following Jesus for years, like I feel like my faith is pretty well put together, I think Jesus actually has something for you too. So I'll invite you to lean in. John writes in John chapter 4 that Jesus, he had to go through Samaria on the way he's going to Galilee. And eventually, he came to the Samaritan village of Sychar near the field that Jacob gave his son Joseph. Now, this is reference to their ancestry. These are historical landmarks that don't necessarily mean much to you and me today, but John is writing them to help the first century Christians understand where this is at. What's interesting is that John writes that Jesus had to go to Samaria. Geographically, he didn't. In fact, most Jews did not go through Samaria. They added a 3-day journey to go around Samaria to get to Galilee. Why? Because the Jews hated the Samaritans. And the Samaritans, frankly, hated the Jews. It's like OSU in Michigan. It's like UTBG, go Rockets. It's like the Browns versus winning. I was told at Finley, though, I got too many sports analogies that I need to fit in like crocheting. It's like knots and crocheting. I don't even know what crocheting is, so hopefully it works. Basically, they didn't like each other, okay? So why does Jesus have to go? Because he's fishing. He has a divine appointment. Not at a lake, at a well. And there are two truths that Jesus reveals that I think are important for all of us. I don't think he wants us to miss it. So as he's making his way through Samaria, Jesus is tired from the long walk. He sat wearily beside the well about noontime, and soon a Samaritan woman came to draw water. Jesus is walking with his disciples, middle of the day. They don't have Uber, okay? They're walking. They don't, Gen Z, they don't have water bottles or Yetis or Stanleys, and they survive just fine, okay? Just like when I was a kid, you had one option, the garden hose. And pro tip, let it run for a second, because that first taste, that first blast is like liquid nickels, okay? You're going to want to let it run, and then it'll taste better, I promise. But essentially, Jesus is taking a break, and the disciples go into a close town to bring back some lunch for him, and a Samaritan woman approaches while Jesus is there. And here's what's peculiar. As most women came in the morning to gather the water that they would need for the day, because it was heavy, and it was the cooler part of the day. This woman is coming at noon in the heat of the day. Why? Because she didn't want to hang out with the rest of the women of the town. She's avoiding them. And as you'll see, there's good reason why. I mean, she's tired. She's carrying some wounds. She's hiding. She's coming to the well for physical water, unaware of how much she needs God. And so what does Jesus do? Well, he asks her, please give me a drink, which seems reasonable enough. I mean, he's hot, it's middle of the day, she's bringing some of the equipment, right? But the woman is confused. Her first thought at this request is, you're a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink? Like, she's like, whoa, why? Because Jews did not talk to Samaritans, period. Let alone take a drink from a Samaritan, person, food, whatever. That would have been considered unclean. Not only that, men didn't typically talk to women that they weren't related to. That was considered scandalous, like HR violation. Like, this is inappropriate. She doesn't understand. Why is he asking for a drink? So Jesus clarifies, if you only knew the gift, remember that word, if you only knew the gift God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me and I would give you living water. What's Jesus doing? He's using a physical thing, a felt need, to point to a deeper spiritual truth. And the truth is, we do that here. We love taking physical things, songs, topics, whatever, physical things to point to a deeper spiritual truth or need that we all have. And we all need God's living water. She can't see it yet. In fact, you can read about it yourself. She goes on to ask Jesus, well, where's your rope and where's your bucket? And I think she's starting to feel like this Jewish individual that showed up at her well is going to get a little mouthy, a little passive aggressive about how this well isn't the right well and the water isn't the same because they're a Samaritan and blah, blah, blah. And in the middle of that, Jesus clarifies, anyone who drinks this water will soon become thirsty again. But those who drink the water that I give will never be thirsty again. It becomes a fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life. And when we read this and we hear eternal life, we think, oh, he's talking about heaven. No, Jesus isn't talking about later. He's talking about now. Your soul and my soul comes alive when you experience God's living water. And the image is of a fresh, bubbling spring, endless source of water within you. The problem that Jesus is pointing at is we keep going to the wrong well. We keep looking for living water in places that we're never meant to satisfy. And so Jesus, to illustrate this, does something interesting. He says, go and get your husband. I don't have a husband. She says, you're right. You don't have a husband, for you've had five husbands, and you aren't even married to the man you're living with now. You certainly spoke the truth. I mean, Jesus gets right to the heart of the issue, not condemningly, just honestly. Now, we don't honestly know why she's been married five times. Some people say she's been unfaithful. That could be true. It could also be that she was unable to have kids, which in that culture, if you couldn't continue the family line, you didn't stay married to those women because you didn't want your inheritance to be given away. So you would divorce them, leave them, which may explain why she's not married to the man she's with now. It could be that her husband's previous husbands died. Either way, what we do know is she's had a difficult life. Like, this is why she comes to the well at noon. And this Jew, this man that she's never met, is aware of all that she is ashamed of. What's Jesus doing? Jesus is naming the thirst that's under the surface. He's not trying to shame her. He's trying to free her. Like, she isn't thirsty for water. She's thirsty for a life that actually works. And she's been going from relationship to relationship, from drink to drink, and every time she ends up empty all over again. Is there anyone here that can relate to that? Like, are there things that you chase and pursue over and over again, hoping that maybe this time it will work, only to end up empty again? I mean, I think for some of us, we chase the well of approval, where we live for the acceptance of others instead of from the approval that God has already given. And so we constantly worry about what other people think. You replay that conversation over and over in your head. You think, did I say it wrong? Did I say it right? Do they think I'm funny? Do they like me? Or maybe you check your phone again to see who liked your recent photo, your recent post. Or maybe you become a slightly different version of yourself depending on who you're with, because if you can change things just a little, maybe this group will like you a little bit more, because if I could just get the approval, then I wouldn't feel so empty. Restless. Maybe for you, it's the well of achievement. Like, your worth is based on how much you accomplish in any given day, how far you're progressing, how far you're moving up, instead of who God says that you are. And so if the list is getting done, if you're moving forward, if you're progressing, you're good. It's like, I'm successful, but if somebody else gets the promotion, if you can't get it all done, you feel behind. You feel like a failure. Like, even when you sit down to rest, your brain won't turn off. You tell yourself, if I could just get this done, then I'll be at peace, but peace never comes. Is that you? Maybe for you it's pleasure. It's like you just need something to make you feel good right now, to cure the emptiness. So you need something to take the edge off. It could be another drink, another snack, another experience, another dopamine hit, another add to cart and have it be here tomorrow, Amazon Prime style. It could be another relationship. It could be another fling. You're looking for anything that will feel better now, hoping that that pleasure will last, and it doesn't. Maybe for you, it's escape. It's like you don't even want to think about your life. So when you get home, you start to scroll or game or binge the show. You know more about other people's lives than you are living your own. And that's the goal. You're trying to drown out your thoughts so that you don't have to think about your life. You're not trying to solve your life. You're trying to get away from it. Just trying to escape. Which is it for you? Like, where do you go? If you're like me, I look at this list and I'm like, well, all four. You know, depends on the week. And here's the thing. Maybe it works for a moment, but eventually what happens? You get thirsty again. Like, if you've ever wrestled with this, I need you to hear this. You're not crazy for feeling empty. You're just drinking from the wrong source. There's no approval, no success, no pleasure, no escape that can fill your soul. It never lasts. Only Jesus can bring that kind of living water that your soul craves. That's what Jesus is going after in this conversation. So what does the woman do? She does what we all do when it starts to feel a little vulnerable. She pivots. She pivots to a spiritual conversation when things start to get a little personal. And she says, you know, I know the Messiah is coming, the one who is called Christ. And when he comes, he will explain everything to us. It was common for Jews and Samaritans to believe that God was going to send an anointed one. That's what Christ means. A chosen one, the Messiah, that was going to help rescue their people. And essentially, this woman is like, hey, I'm open to God, but I don't really know what's true. There are many options. And so whenever God's anointed one comes, he'll fix the chaos that's my life. He'll clarify the confusion. Like, I know that God is out there, and hopefully he can make sense of this, and it's in this moment where I think Jesus, with a face full of compassion, looks at her and says, I am the Messiah. Now, you got to think about the audacity that it takes to make this claim about yourself to this woman. Like, she's like, hey, I know God's going to send someone that's going to fix the whole world. What would it take for you to say, I am the Messiah? Like, that's crazy. It's crazy to say that, which is weird because a lot of people in our society love what Jesus teaches. They're like, oh, I think Jesus' teaching is amazing. They just don't buy the resurrection, the death, burial, resurrection bit, which is interesting. Like, even Joe Rogan, he's like, I can't find a flaw in any of Jesus' teaching. He goes to church, but he struggles with what Jesus taught. Who he says he was. Like, either Jesus is crazy, like a lunatic, or he actually believed that this is who he was, what he was intended to do. Like, that's profound. Jesus is revealing his identity to this woman, his Messiah identity. And if I could nerd out for just a minute, Jews and Samaritans actually had a shared history. They both traced their ancestry back to Genesis, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. They would have taught their kids about how their ancestors were slaves in Egypt until God called Moses from a burning bush to go and rescue them. And when God was having this conversation with Moses, he asked, who should I say send me? And for the first time, God gives his name. Do you remember the name that he gave? The name was, I am. So not only is Jesus claiming to be the Messiah, he's using the same name that would be tied back to the God that Jews and Samaritans believe was a part of their history. And so the first time Jesus explicitly and clearly reveals his identity is to this woman, not a priest, not a religious leader, not an insider who had their life figured out, not Nick at Night, a woman with a broken story. Because God doesn't wait for your life to be perfect. He meets you in the mess, at the well, in the heat of the day, when you're carrying shame, pretending you're not thirsty. To this woman whose life is a mess, he says, I am is here. The one you've been waiting for is here. And I have a gift for you. Friends, being a sinner does not disqualify you from following Jesus, from experiencing Jesus. It's a prerequisite. The Messiah is here because he had to go to offer her living water, the same that he's offering living water to you today. And what was this woman's response? Well, the woman left her water jar beside the well, ran back to the village, telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? She's not even sure. She just knows she experienced something, so much so that she left her water jar behind. The thing that she thought she came for was no longer the thing. And she runs back into the town with full of people that she's been trying to avoid. And she's like, come and see. Like, I've experienced something I want you to experience too. This man told me everything I ever did, which makes me wonder what her ex-husbands were thinking. Like, everything? Did he mention my name? Like, this is weird. I'm a little uncomfortable, right? The woman who didn't want to be seen now becomes the one who helps others see Jesus for the first time. That's what living water does. It changes you. It moves you from empty to overflowing, from hiding to inviting others. Come and see. Like, her encounter with Jesus sends her fishing for people, and she's not even sure if he's the Messiah yet. But she can't help but share what God has started to do in her life. That's how you know you're experiencing living water. You can't help but talk about it. Just like your physical body will die without water, your soul depends on living water. You cannot survive. You will not thrive without Jesus. His presence sustains you. It fills us. Are you making space for him? Or are you going back to the same empty wells, hoping for different results? Like, what jar is Jesus inviting you to leave behind today? Because your soul depends on living water. But just like your physical body, that's not all. And what I love about this story is Jesus actually isn't done. He's about to show us that our soul also needs spiritual food. Because just then, the disciples came back. They were shocked to find him talking to a woman, and none of them had the nerve to ask, "What do you want with her? Like, why are you talking to this woman?" I mean, can you picture it? They're walking back. They've got lunch. They're bringing it to Jesus. They can see the well in the distance, and there's another person at the well. That's interesting. As they get closer, they see that it's a woman. As they get a little closer, a Samaritan woman. Like, whoa, they're talking to each other. Like, what's Jesus thinking? This is weird. Did he plan this? Like, this could be scandalous. What's Jesus doing? He's fishing. And what have they forgotten? His invitation to go and fish for people. And so rather than addressing their questions, they ignore it. And they start urging Jesus, "Eat something, Rabbi." But Jesus replied, "I have a kind of food that you know nothing about." Food? Like, they're confused. Did someone bring him food while we were gone? The disciples asked each other, like, food? Like, I thought we were bringing him lunch. Like, when did he eat? Did he DoorDash something? Like, how did this happen? What's Jesus doing? He's using a physical thing, and he's about to point to a deeper spiritual truth that, as Jesus followers, it's so easy to miss, especially in the American church. Jesus said, "My nourishment comes from doing the will of God who sent me and from finishing his work." My food, what feeds me, is doing the will of God and finishing his work. In other words, you don't get spiritually fed by learning alone. You get fed or nourished by joining what God is doing. You are fed when you live out of your God-given purpose. And people get this wrong all the time. I hear it. "Oh, I just wasn't getting fed at that church. I just wasn't getting fed here." And what they usually mean is, "I wasn't learning anything new or exciting that I didn't know about the Bible." And Jesus actually makes it very clear. You're not fed by information. We are fed by participation in what he's doing. You are fed when you join him in making an eternal difference. And so maybe the reason your faith feels a little dry, maybe you feel a little empty after following Jesus for all of these years, is because you're literally not being fed food. It's not because there's no truth. It's not because you're not hearing. It's because there's no movement. And I mean, the disciples, they didn't see it. They went into town looking for lunch. They were in Samaria thinking about physical food. And Jesus was fishing for people and experiencing spiritual food. Spiritual impact. That's why he goes on to say what he says next. He says, you know the saying, 4 months between planting and harvest. This is like a common proverb that would have been used. It would have been on like the first century Hobby Lobby store floor as like word art. 4 months between planting and harvest. Like, if you've ever fished, maybe you've heard the phrase. That's why they call it fishing and not catching. You know, it's basically illustrating good things take time. And so Jesus is like, you know, good things take time. 4 months between planting and harvest. But I say, wake up and look around. The fields are already ripe for harvest. Some English translations use the word white here. It's white with harvest. Why? Because the grain that grew when it was ready to be harvested would turn white. And one of the interesting things that I learned is that Samaritan men wore traditional white cloaks. And I think, some people think, that when Jesus says, wake up, like look around, the disciples would have looked up and seen the white cloaks of the men walking out of the village to come and be introduced to Jesus. And Jesus is like, keep your eyes open. There are spiritual opportunities all around you. And when you keep looking for food in the wrong places, you miss it. He's not done. He continues. He says, you know the saying, another proverb, one plants and another harvests. And it's true. I sent you to harvest where you didn't plant. Others had already done the work. Who's the other? The woman. The conversation with Jesus. And now, as these men are coming out, now you will get the opportunity to gather the harvest. What Jesus teaches here is so important. You and I, we don't do everything. Some people plant seeds. Other people water. And some people get to be there when somebody says yes. So stop feeling like you have to do it all. You have to know it all. Stop feeling bad if someone says no or doesn't respond to your invitation to come to church. No one person does all the work. We all have a part to play. So wake up to the opportunities that are around you. Each day, every time you go to work, the grocery store, school, your family, your neighbors, friends, God, where are you inviting me to join you in the work that you are doing? Because fishing isn't about catching every fish. It's about casting where God is already moving. Like, you don't have to have it all figured out. The Samaritan woman didn't. I mean, think about this. The Samaritan woman, whose life is a mess, is used by God in a way that Jesus meets with Nicodemus and nothing happened. But he meets with this woman and she goes back, and it tells us that the whole town came out to hear about Jesus. So stop stressing about the part that you play. Stop worrying about whether you say it perfectly or not. Just step into the purposeful opportunities God gives you. And here's what's amazing. When you do that, when you're faithful, when you step into doing the work, living out your purpose, do you know what happens? Jesus tells us. He says, what joy awaits both the planter and the harvester alike. When you are faithful and living out your God-given purpose, there's joy in it. When you step into the assignments that God puts in front of you, it nourishes your soul. It fills you. You experience a joy unlike any other thing that you could do here on earth. So if you've been feeling spiritually empty, hungry, maybe it's not that something is missing, it's that you're not moving. Maybe it's time to shift your focus from, hey, what can I get? To where can I give? Because something comes alive in you when you move from consumer to contributor. And today, I think Jesus is inviting us into a life of flourishing with him. A life full of living water, full of his presence, where you're spending time with him daily, reading his word, praying and talking to him. I mean, it's as simple as using the daily on our app, where we're trying to build these spiritual habits of connecting with Jesus, letting his truth shape how we see ourselves instead of running after those empty wells. Just like your physical body won't live without water, your soul depends on Jesus' presence. But don't let it stop there. Your soul also needs food, which is living in his purpose, because Jesus makes it clear we are fed when we join with him in finishing his work. And so maybe for some of you today, it's time to shift from what can I get to what can I give. Like, stop letting the what ifs and the why nots keep you on the sidelines. Explore your purpose. Wake up in the morning, every day, when you go to work, when you engage in church, like, step into making a difference opportunities. Because our assignment is clear. I mean, this is our memory verse. It says that we are Christ's ambassadors. We're not his students. We're not his attendees. We're not his learners alone. We are his ambassadors. We have work to do. And what's our work? God is making his appeal through us. We speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God. And the truth is, God's enemy would love to keep you busy, tired, distracted, putting it off. Why? Because he doesn't want people coming back to God. And he also knows how much your faith will come alive, how much it will nourish you if you step into your calling. And so he keeps us thinking about all the other things instead of stepping into the purposeful moments God puts in front of us. All the excuses, all the fatigue. I actually experienced this too, friends. It's not just you. And I work at church. Tuesdays are a long day for me. Start early in the morning and I don't get home until 9:30 at night. Because right now we are hosting an experience called Alpha, specifically designed for people who don't follow Jesus. And I'll be honest, after a day full of meetings at about 5:30, when I'm driving over to our Alpha gathering, I'm thinking to myself, man, it'd be kind of nice to go home right now. I'm kind of tired. Why didn't I do that? Blah, blah. And then I show up. And there's a purposeful conversation where I see God at work. And you know what happens? At the end of Alpha, I'm like, can we do that again? Like, it's full of energy. I sense I'm a part of what God is doing in the world. That's what happens when we experience spiritual food, purposeful living. It's life-giving. So what step is God inviting you to take today? Like, let's just listen for a moment to God's Spirit. Quietly ask, God, what step do you have for me? Maybe you are like the woman at the well. You're thirsty. You've been searching for living water. Like, what jar is he inviting you to leave behind today? Maybe you can't think of a time when you've surrendered your life to Jesus. Maybe he's inviting you to say yes, to make today an intentional choice to follow him. You could do that right now in the quietness of your heart. Maybe the step he's inviting you to take is to get baptized, to go public with your faith Easter weekend, because you don't earn your way into the tub. It is a declaration of what Jesus has done for you that you could not do. I am dead and he is bringing me to new life. Maybe it's baptism and time to go all in. But maybe for you, your soul is hungry. Like, you will never be fully spiritually satisfied until you begin to step into your God-given purpose. Your life is a God story. So step into it. If you don't know your purpose, go to our Growth Track experience where you can begin to get a glimpse of that. Where are you joining the dream team or being a part of God's movement in our world today? And I mean, the truth is, it's the week before Easter. Wake up. The fields are ripe with harvest. Like, who has God put in your life to invite, to hear the gospel message Easter weekend? Like, who are you investing in? If you don't have any unchurched friends, well, maybe that's the step. Is start getting around people so that you fish, not just for them, for you. I want to take a moment and just think about the unchurched people that you know who you would love to have a life-changing encounter with Jesus. Would you just say your name, pray their name to God right now in the quietness of your heart, wherever you're watching? Tell them who you would love to see God move in their life right now. God, I'm thinking of Tony. I'm thinking of Nick. God, we are lifting all of these names to you because they need your living water. And by the power of your Spirit, would you just make yourself known to them? Help draw them to a life-giving church where they can encounter you, your presence. And God, would you open our eyes to the purposeful moments that you may put in our path for them or others to play a part in the story that you're writing? Would you give us the courage to step into it? God, would you feed us through the process? We want to experience more of your joy in our life. And so don't let us fall prey to Satan's lies and keep us on the sideline. Instead, help us to live out the story that you're writing in us and through us so that the world can know how good and powerful you are. And God, we promise to give you all the glory in the end. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.